Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Greetings from ModPath Chat. Our guests today are two distinguished faculty members at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. They are Dr. Jeff Medeiros and Dr. Roberto Miranda. Dr. Medeiros is a professor of pathology, and for 19 years, he has served as the inaugural chair of the Department of Pathology, Hematopathology. Jeff is a world-renowned expert in the field that I'm most fortunate to have as one of our brilliant associate editors at Modern Pathology. Jeff is a prolific author with contributions that include classic textbooks such as Joachim Lymph Node Pathology and the AFIP Atlas of Tumor Pathology in its fourth series. Dr. Miranda is a professor of hematopathology at MD Anderson with research focus in the pathogenesis of lymphomas. In particular, the unusual type of lymphomas that grow around breast implants, which incidentally is the topic of our podcast today. The work of our very prestigious guest in this area has led to governmental policy change for the manufacturing of breast implants, banning the use of textured implant in the U.S. and other countries. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you, George, for having us.
Thank you, Dr. Netto.
It's a pleasure to have you. So let's move on. Our topic today is related to the recent report that you had in Modern Pathology on EBV-positive large B-cell lymphoma that are associated with breast implant. And before we talk about this particular study, can you, one of you or both, give us a little background to our audience about the topic?
Yeah, well, we started about these studies about 13 years ago in 2008 when we identified one of these cases. And then we read a recent report by the group of the Mayo Clinic about a series of these cases and start paying attention to this lymphoma. And then we put together our series and review our cases here. And I say, it seems to be an entity. So we start working on that. We start contributing and eventually, after several publications, has been recognized as an entity. Certainly, this publication has been all over the world, and now is recognized as a distinct entity, which is a lymphoma which grows around the breast implants.
And it is made it to the WHO, right?
Yeah, so that's the, just to clarify, that was the breast implant anaplastic large cell lymphomas that are now part of the WHO. This recent paper you're discussing is a newer entity that's not the WHO just yet.
Correct. And we'll get to that. But in terms of background, what people associate with breast implant is the ALCL, right?
Yes.
And that's now recognizable. So that's a good segue to the paper. So what's so special about the publication? What's the cohort and what tools did you use?
Well, I'll say something, which is in most of the lymphomas which associate with implants are called as mentioned, anaplastic large cell lymphoma, which is defined for a marker, which is CD30. And that's how it is called and that's identified. But certainly over the years, there are other lesions which associate with the breast implant, but certainly the focus now is in lymphomas, and we found other type of lymphomas. But what has been more notorious is this lymphoma, which associated with a virus, which is the Epstein-Barr virus, which we know is a virus very well known associated with Burkitt lymphoma, and has been over the time associated with many different type of lymphoma, or we call lymphoproliferative disorder, when we are not sure yet that this lymphoma is going there. And now this type of lymphoma start appearing associated with the breast implant also. So that is the serious about these cases. And certainly we start seeing these cases, and other authors all over the world also start talking about this. So we decided that it's time to put our cases together. And that is what we publish in Modern Pathology with Dr. Jeff Medeiros as first author.
Jeff, anything else you want to add about that?
No, I of course, completely agree. In the literature now, the cases we reported have been reported in a couple other journals in smaller number. And all of this has happened within the last 2 or 3 years. No one had published on EBV positive large B around implants until maybe 2019 or 2020. So it's all relatively new. There's maybe only about 20 cases reported in the literature that I know of right now. So it's a pretty unusual entity, but it's, as Roberto's alluded to, it sort of mimics the ALCL, but it's a different entity. And so I think well worth bringing to the readership of the journal to see this and give some, maybe some, our paper tries to give some clues based on the morphology and the markers, of course, the differences between the B and the breast implant ALCL cases.
And so speaking of that, what would be the key morphologic features? Looking at the beautiful images, one can spot some differences. Can you share with our audience some of these?
Yeah, what we have seen that this tumor is characterized by the presence of very large cells. So very similar to the ALCL, has a lot of necrosis, which is also similar. The difference is that ALCL is 30 positive, but also marked with T cell markers like CD4, CD43. And this is negative for those markers, but it's positive for CD20, which is a B cell marker. And then after that, they start looking at that. And then it's also positive for the virus, Epstein-Barr virus, that this is the interesting thing. Again, pathologists, we are most interested, certainly trying to see how different it is from the anaplastic large cell lymphoma, but also trying to understand why the virus is there, how the virus is presenting under so many different contexts, so many different patient characteristics. And then in general, Epstein-Barr virus has been associated, let's say, with patients with immunosuppression, for example, post-transplant. A lot of the post-transplant within 1 year, all EBV positive. But then we say this patient with the breast implant don't have any transplant. They are very healthy. They are very immunocompetent. So then here, this is an opportunity for hematopathologists or for pathologists to study again another mechanism where EBV can be pathogenic. In fact, we have determined here what we call latency patterns of EBV. Again, the latency pattern that we characterize for EBV is called the latency pattern type 3, which is exactly the same pattern that we see in post-transplant disorder. You see how this patient is immunocompetent. Why is having pattern 3, which is for immunosuppressed? And then what we have determined and we are learning in this, that this is immunosuppression is just localized. So that's something like a new unheard, how can be an immunosuppression just local?
And the microenvironment. And the microenvironment
exactly,
around the
implant. Just the microenvironment that the implant, the host reaction, and the virus, they play together. So I would like to present to Dr. Medeiros to maybe add some comments about this.
Of course, I agree completely. I, You know, I think the mechanisms are still a little bit unknown, but certainly the idea of a closed environment, perhaps in part a mechanical barrier to the host immune system, is one possibility. Hypoxia may have an important role here. Most people agree there's chronic energetic stimulation involved, whether it's due to the textured implant forming a bacterial kind of infection, which stimulates the lymphocytes, or possibly the silicone capsule of the implant bleeds a little bit of these plastic microparticles that the osteocytes might recognize as a foreign body antigen and then turn on the B cells in a response in some way. Nobody knows exactly why, but this seems to be the common theme. Persistent antigenic stimulation, some sort of evolution of a clone, and then likely additional genetic hits, which then lead to the full-blown lymphoma. And presumably, these patients all have latent EB infection, probably from exposure as a child. And then this is reactivation in this localized environment. So that's the thinking of what's going on.
Pretty interesting.
You look a little different. Perhaps, Roberto, you could just mention some of the morphologic features of these bees versus the ALCLs, just for people to, you know, I mean, obviously you have to do the markers, but it's always nice if you can guess ahead by looking through the microscope.
Exactly. We as a pathologist try to identify and correlate with morphology. And we say, wow, this is pretty similar. So anybody who haven't seen this case will say this is identical to breast implant ALCL. But when we look at that, these cases have a little bit more necrosis. And the neoplastic cell, even when they are very large, they don't have this feature but have the ALCL, which is what we call the hallmark, because they are like a C shape and they have a Golgi there and they are very strongly positive. These are not C shaped, they are rather round, and the nucleolus is not that big as prominent as the ALCL. And certainly SERI can be positive, but usually it's mild, focal, it's not as strong as the ALCL. So there are reasons to think that they are different.
And also, don't forget, I'm sorry, George, don't forget to mention that layering effect,
correct,
Roberto, that you first recognized and is well illustrated in the paper.
Correct. And that's what I want. So it sounds like even an architectural difference between the ALCL. So you see layers and layers of that. And also, I think lymphoid aggregates, you mentioned the presence of some lymphoid aggregates. So even on a low power, like the good old Dr. Neswani's low power hematopathology, you probably can pick up some difference in this.
Absolutely. You know, we as pathologists like to go on the details and try. I didn't know how much to expand, but certainly when we see low power, beginning with the breast implant, the usually ALCL, the patients present with big effusion. All of a sudden, in a month, they say, wow, this grew. In a month that they feel of fluid, you know, that is how they present usually. This person present, they say, it's bothering me, a little bit of local discomfort, but there is no big effusion, it's minimal. But it's very necrotic just around that. So that's different. The presentation is different. And then when we look at the microscope, as you are mentioning, there are certain features that we say they are different from the ALCL. And one is it's a layer, it's like a sandwich, you know, it's a layer of necrosis, a layer of tumor, a layer of necrosis, many layers that we don't see usually in ALCL. And certainly, as I mentioned, the cytologic features are different. And also the immunophenotypics are different because these are B-cell lymphomas.
And you would think, George, that this may have some relevance to the cytopathologists, because for breast implant ALCL, there's a lot of fluid, as Dr. Roberto just said, and you can probably put an FNA in there and get a whole bunch of tumor cells and deal with it. But for these EBV-positive large Bs, there's not a lot of fluid. It's minimal fluid. It's just a thick capsule with all this necrosis and sort of grungy stuff between the tumor and unlikely to come out in the needle. So, you know, that would be another, and I think Roberto also mentioned that is it, in addition to the ALCL patients having these big swelling breasts, the patients with EBV diffuse large B are more contracture. So the breast looks funny, you know, it sticks out more. or it sticks to the right or left a little more, but it's not big and swollen the way the ALCL cases are.
And also the other comment that Dr. Neto said, that there are also lymphoid aggregates at the periphery. That's a little bit more frequent in this, which can reveal also some of the pathogenesis, as Dr. Neto also mentioned about the microenvironment. We're still in the process of evaluating. That makes difference. You know why this is having this type of reaction, which is different from the other.
Yeah, which is... the next point that I was, because you keep referring even in the title that this could have some pathogenic clues to why this particular type or in general these lymphomas arise. Following on your point about the immune suppression in the microenvironment, I imagine you're looking at different type of tolerant cells, different type of macrophages. That's the next step to understand that, or?
That is correct. You know, there are certainly, that is something that we have to evaluate, what is the manifestation of microenvironment immunosuppression. And usually that is called the response that immunosuppress. And one of the mechanisms which is mentioned is about the local micro environment, because the increase of T regulatory cells, for example, which inhibit any response against the virus. And some of the cytokines that we like to see, for example, interleukin-10 is the one which defines immunosuppression. That is one of them. And certainly we are open to see what we find, you know, and then in that we'll interpret. But certainly that is an approach that we would like to see, how to evaluate the microenvironment in one class of tumor like ALCL versus this, which is more EBV associated.
You know, George, one of the challenges, at least from my point of view, is that the quality of the material is not very good for molecular studies. It's not easy to just dig the capsule out of the paraffin block and try to do anything in terms of gene mutations and the like, because the quality of that DNA, you know, the cells are half dead and then they're surrounded by all this grungy stuff. And so we often don't get a good sample for molecular studies. But Roberto's been working on it and trying to get these people earlier. And he's too humble to say it, but he's kind of a guru of the breast implant community. And these, there's like, as you know, there's about 1,000 patients with breast implant ALCL reported worldwide. And a fair number of these women know Roberto by name. And I call him and ask for advice. They've come into the hospital and he brings them by to say hello to me out of respect to me, which I appreciate. It's very impressive. And they treat him like he is a rock star.
That's great. We'll take that. We want pathologist rock star. And Jeff, I was trying to be, you know, a little bit generous to you by saying you both changed the governmental policy. I'm sure Roberto had more to do with that.
Absolutely. Roberto is the leader. I am thrilled to be the helper, to sit at the right hand of the master.
All right.
Yeah, I think what I would like to say is that this is certainly a team. You know, here at MD Anderson, my colleague is Dr. Clemens. He's a plastic surgeon who, for them, it's very significant, this disease, because the patients, most of them have cosmetic surgery, and the plastic surgeons are the ones who do the implant and all the cosmetic thing, and also the repair and the reconstruction in patients with cancer. So for them, the disease is really, this is a priority. But for pathologists, it's like, this is a rare lymphoma. We don't process capsules. You know, we don't see them. And then also we have here the chair of breast oncology, Dr. Kelly Hunt. She's also an excellent surgeon who, from the very beginning, she decided what ALCL should be treated as. So she designed a protocol, and then certainly we follow, and she just right on track. And that is how we at MD Anderson created the recommendations for surgery. And subsequently, we have said recommendation how to process these specimens. And then certainly Dr. Clemens has been very vocal about this. So he has talk at the FDA level, and he is the person really who has influenced a lot the relation with the policymakers at the FDA and how all this has been evolved. But certainly we have contributed that in supporting the idea, giving the scientific basis for the disease, and this has evolved that way. Again, as you mentioned, policies about the manufacturing of these implants have changed now. The breast implants are not recommended anymore, at least in the United States and many other countries, and so on. You know, patients are now more aware that the implants can cause disease. In the past, they thought that it was totally inert. There is no reaction to the silicone. Now, certainly part of the effort that we do, we receive a variety of specimens associated with breast implants, and we have been learning about other diseases. There is something which is called the breast implant illness, and this is very common in patients who have reactions. A patient with implant, they have an immunological or cutaneous manifestations, and that still needs to be defined as a disorder, a disease that is not recognized. But again, there are patients who suffer with these symptoms, and certainly we are asked to give opinion on what we think about that. And again, this is something still not defined and needs work to be done.
And to finish up, go ahead.
George, if I could just say one more thing, if you don't mind. So it's clearly a team effort, and Roberto's part of an important team, and he's mentioned many of the players. But this is a disease that pathologists saw first, and I just wanted to emphasize that. We tend to when you get in front of the clinicians, if you know what I'm trying to say, they seem to think that we have a minimal role and they are the leaders. And that is true many times. But in this instance, it was the pathologist who saw this first. You know, Dr. Dogan, when he was at the Mayo Clinic, saw this. Roberto got into it very early with me. And then after papers were published, including a big paper that Roberto wrote in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, then the clinicians got involved, and now it's a huge team. And of course, once the clinicians get involved, we still have a role, but in some ways it seems a little minor now because Dr. Clemens is certainly leading the effort. He's a terrific plastic surgeon, and he's already mentioned Dr. Kelly Hunt, who's a great oncology surgeon, and they deserve all the credit in the world for what they're doing. I don't want to take anything away from them, but we were the first ones to sort of come up with this. And I just wanted to say it.
We as in the field of pathology. And that's a very important point for, a lot of our audience. The podcasts are people new to the field and excited about the field. And it's a great reminder how critical pathology can be in identifying diseases and then delineating them. And which brings us to the outcome. So these are a lot of time surgeries alone is good, but some of them need adjuvant therapy. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. As I mentioned, Dr. Kelly Hunt here was fundamental. Her perception of what it was, how it was, when we show her the outcomes of diseases, and she said, this is surgical disease. And obviously, you have to go to the current. And when you mention ALCL, that is chemotherapy. That is anti-CD30. It's not surgery. So that sounds unheard, but eventually, we showed data and we demonstrated that surgery is the key. You had to remove the implant. You had to remove all evidence of disease. And then that concept seems so simple. It's not so simple because we still see patients who come here. They change the implant. They don't remove the capsule entirely. They see a part only. That because they remove the implant. What happened? Whatever is left in that capsule, it comes back as an aggressive disease. It comes back as the same disease or more aggressive. So again, the prognostic is excellent when the disease is diagnosed early, but if the disease is left to go its regular course after surgery, that is not a good disease.
Now, we've seen some people with, certain, not just regional nodes, but chest wall invasion. We had a patient here who had bone marrow dissemination. We've had a few die of this disease. So when you get it early and it's localized and you can unblock, resect it, it's wonderful. People don't need any more therapy. That's pretty much the consensus. But once it gets out of the capsule, there are problems. And so, as Roberto's just mentioned, one of the big issues is, from my perspective anyway, is that surgeons are used to switching out an implant and putting in a new one, but not taking out the capsule, which is a lot more work. And if that capsule remains behind, it can really, the tumor has a chance now to spread. And at that point, it's much harder to treat.
Very informative and very important for our audience around the world and other places where they don't get to see that many, especially pathologists, to start identifying these clearly for the implications that Jeff, you just mentioned. Well, I'm grateful to both of you. It's really been a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to having you in future episodes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you, George.
It's a great pleasure being here.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.